Let us pray. Gracious God, open our hearts to hear your word to us this day. Show us something new in these ancient and timeless verses. Through Christ we ask this. Amen. The Lord spoke to Moses, saying, "Speak to all the congregation of the people of Israel and say to them, 'You shall be holy, for I, the Lord, your God, am holy. You shall not render an unjust judgment. You shall not be partial to the poor or defer to the great. With justice you shall judge your neighbor. You shall not go around as a slanderer among your people, and you shall not profit by the blood of your neighbor. I am the Lord. You shall not hate in your heart any one of your kin. You shall reprove your neighbor, or you will incur guilt yourself. You shall not take vengeance or bear a grudge against any of your people, but you shall love your neighbors as yourself. I am the Lord." And this is the word of the Lord. Well, when in your life you find that you're looking for words of inspiration or comfort or stories that teach us the ways of God and God's love, Leviticus may not be your go-to book of the Bible. Leviticus means law of priests, and it's best known as a book of instruction or laws. And I did a Google search to see what I'd find as a definition of Leviticus if I just threw it out there. And Wikipedia put it this way. It's a book of ritual, legal, and moral practices for the people of God. And that just draws you right in, right? You want to curl up with a cup of coffee and dig in. But as part of the Torah, the first five books of the Bible, Leviticus reflects the central concerns of the ancient Israelites. And the most vital of these was how to live faithfully before God. Of course, much of what we find in Leviticus is rooted in a place and time that's far different from our own. For example, beard trimming was prohibited, as was the eating of shellfish, and also the wearing of clothing made of mixed fabrics. Now, I imagine among us, there are many who are guilty of one or all of these things this morning. But some of the laws we read are as essential today as they were yesterday, like do not cause someone injury, or don't try to lie or to steal. Those remain consistently against what we would hope people would do. And still others are continuing to be relevant, but their application may be a bit more ambiguous, like the prohibitions against perverting justice or spreading slander or doing anything to endanger a neighbor's life or seek revenge or hold a grudge. Now, I think we'd agree that those things are wrong and that there are times when what they look like is abundantly clear, but we'd also probably agree that throughout history, they have been interpreted in various ways. And then right there in the heart of Leviticus, we find these words spoken to Moses, where God says, "You shall be holy, for I, the Lord, your God, am holy." It's a call to holiness. And holiness tends to point us to God and God's ethical and moral perfection. But in this passage in particular, we get a hint that God intends for holiness to be a quality that transforms us and deepens our experience of community life, that we would grow deeper in our life together. God gives this call to holiness through Moses to the people. People who, after their mass exodus out of Egypt, had been wandering around, carrying all their worldly possessions with them, living in close proximity to everyone else wandering around and carrying all their worldly possessions with them. These were people who had no access to a regular routine, who could no longer count on the basics of life like food and water. And though they brought with them on that journey this memory, this horrific memory of a strict and brutal life in slavery that they had longed to escape, with every step they took, they grew more and more weary of those present circumstances and more wary of what the future would hold. And that's the context into which God speaks to Moses and says, "Say to the people, be holy, for I am holy." Now, to be honest, holiness hardly feels like a remedy for this weary band of travelers. What we know of holiness makes it feel more like a barrier than an invitation. Holiness prompts awe and reverence. It's what sets us apart from God, drawing us to worship God, even while it holds us at a distance from God. In the story of Moses' call, the holy ground on which he is standing is so special, it calls for him to remove his shoes. In the story of the Ten Commandments, being in the presence of God requires that one avert their eyes. For the prophet Isaiah, the power of God's holiness was so powerful that it led him to confess his guilt and cry out, "I am a man of unclean lips." And while in the tabernacle and later the temple, the Holy of Holies was a space none but the high priest could enter to make the sacred offering. Practically speaking, holiness seems to be a quality that demands reverence, but also distance, like the living room or parlor reserved for some special visitor, but off limits to the rest of us. So how do we get our minds around this strong, but almost counterintuitive command? I think there are two things for us to keep in mind. The first is that we embrace our identity as children of God. Back in the story of creation, God created us and called the creation, and us in particular, very good. It's a powerful statement about God's creative love, but that's not the only thing it tells us. The story of God creating the world is as much about us as it is about God. It's a story about how God has equipped us by this image to be active and passionate in the world. And it's a story of our calling to be faithful with that very image as we move about through each and every day. And the second thing we need to do is to broaden how we understand holy. While the examples of holiness I mentioned earlier are undisputed examples of the ways holiness has been experienced, there's another definition and another way that we as people of God can understand holiness. The God who created us is also the one who saw the hardship of the Israelites and intervened, setting them apart for his special purpose. And then God stayed with them. Through all the messiness of that journey, God showed them mercy again and again and again, even when, and especially when, it was undeserved. This is the God who loved the world deeply enough to get right into the midst of it and experience it through the messiness of the birth of Jesus, his life, and his death. God's holiness demands that we remove our shoes and worship, but for us, being holy means we are set apart for the day-to-day work of God, getting our hands dirty in the messiness of life. A couple weeks ago, I went home about mid-afternoon from church in order to walk my dogs before a meeting or two meetings I had that night. And just as we were ready to head out and go for our walk, both of my dogs ran to the windows and started barking wildly. They'd seen a dog wander into our yard and just sit right outside the window. I didn't think much about it. That happens from time to time, and usually the dog meanders on its way. But when it didn't leave right away, I went out to shoo it home. Well, that didn't work. I could tell by looking at him that he was well cared for, that somebody loved this dog. But he wasn't wearing a collar, and I didn't know who that someone was. And I knew I had a choice. I could just go on with my plans, take my dogs for a walk, and hope our visitor would find his way home. Or I could help him find his way home. Now, we live right on 340 outside of Grados, and that traffic moves quickly, and especially around rush hour. A big part of me just wanted to pretend that wasn't going to be a problem and just continue with my plans. But I knew he was going to need some help getting to a safe place. And so I put his picture up on Facebook, hoping that word would spread. And I borrowed my dog, Gretel's collar and leash, and we started walking around the area, hoping I'd run into someone who was calling for a lost dog, or that the dog himself would drag me to his house and look very much at home when we got there. This also didn't work. And so I called my vet for advice, secretly hoping they'd tell me, "We have a shelter for dogs who have been lost, bring him in." She didn't tell me that, but what she did tell me was that I could bring him in, they could scan him for a chip, and if he had one, that would lead me to his owner. We jumped in the truck and headed to the vet. We were about 4 miles down the road when I noticed a strange smell and the temperature rising in the temperature gauge. And at this point, the dog had made his way from one side of the truck onto my lap and was between me and the steering wheel. I was less certain this was going to work out well. With just a mile or so to go, I made it to the vet, and when we stopped, I looked down at the passenger side floor and saw that it was filled with coolant. I decided things were definitely not going well at all. As it turned out, the dog didn't have a chip. The heater coil had failed, and we were stuck at the vet, and I still had meetings I wanted to go to. I was beginning to regret going home to walk the dogs at all. In the end, and with help, we were able to get back to my house. I got to my meetings, and the next morning, the dog was reunited happily with his family. Now, I'm not going to tell you that this experience of helping a lost dog find its way home is a prime example of what it means to be holy as the Lord our God is holy. I promise I'm not going to tell you that. But I will say that from start to finish, I was very aware of how frustrated the situation made me. I had things I wanted and needed to do, but I just could not leave that dog to wander around so close to 340. And beyond that, that whole experience has become a parable of sorts for me. It's made me reflect on the things I choose to see and act upon, but also on what I choose not to see, in order to keep things moving smoothly, to keep things from getting too messy. On behalf of God, Moses says to the people, "You shall be holy, because I, the Lord your God, am holy." And what follows tells us that holiness is not found on a mountain or in hours of solitude and prayer, but rather, holiness shows up in ways that may surprise us, causing us to loosen our grip on ourselves and reach out to others with love. The holiness to which God calls us reflects God's desire to affect every single part of our lives, and especially those parts that include other people. The God that called Moses to bring a whole people out of Egypt brought a people that were young and old. There were generous and kind people. There were self-centered and short-tempered people. There were people who had a great sense of humor and people who had no sense of humor at all. There were people who generously shared what they had with their neighbors, and there were those who held tightly to what was theirs. There were people who enjoyed being together with all of this wonderful community, and there were others who just wanted to be alone. There were people who could be trusted, and there were people who would be met with suspicion. There were people who had deep needs, and there were people who had much to share. And every single one of them was part of God's great community. And God wanted every single one of them to belong to each other just as that band of diverse and worn down people belong to God. And that's really what holiness is about. That we do what we can for another person, and that what we do for them is truly in their best interest, even when it's messy and complicated and disrupts our days. It's born out of loving our neighbors. And while this can often feel like a natural extension of our relationships that comes easily to us when a need arises in someone's life that we know and love, it can also be very hard work, because loving our neighbors can sometimes mean that we make a meal or provide shelter or speak up for or somehow protect people we didn't even know were there and maybe even wished weren't there at all. Well, this sounds a lot like a parable that Jesus told about a Samaritan and an enemy that needed help. In the parable, the Samaritan steps away from the rhythm of his life, from where he was going, in order to do what was right and just for this person. He embraced the messy work of holiness by helping a man who'd been beaten and robbed, and who most likely wouldn't have done the same for him. Jesus opened up the definition of neighbor with that parable to include not only those who are known and close to us, but also including a stranger on the road, or maybe even someone we don't care for at all in need. While rescuing a wounded enemy is not likely to be our next holy act, but every day brings with it opportunities for us to more fully and more intentionally reflect God's holiness. I'd like to invite you to stand now and affirm what we believe. When Abraham's descendants were slaves in Egypt, God heard their cries and prayers. God remembered his promise and sent Moses to free them from bondage. We declare God's steadfast love and sovereign power. The Lord can be trusted to keep promises. The Lord still acts in the affairs of individuals and nations to set oppressed and persecuted people free. Freed slaves became the people of God when they accepted the Lord's covenant. God charged them to respond to his rescuing love by obeying his commandments. Their life together was to express the justice and compassion of their holy God. Since we too are covenant people, we must holy as the Lord is holy. We must keep God's commandments, not in order to earn or compel the Lord's favor, but to reflect the character of God and to be his grateful and loving people.